Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Item D2, a report on greenhouse gas emissions.
Randy Dodd will present the staff report.
So I'm just primarily going to provide an introduction here for another speaker. Tonight we want to give you a report on some work that's been done by Chris Lozinski, who's been a Delta Fellow. Delta stands for Developing Energy Leaders Through Action program at UNC, and Chris has been working with town staff for about 6 months now. This is a program that's comes from some state energy office stimulus money that provides a variety of entities across the state with interns and fellows. And so it's my privilege to introduce Chris tonight. I did want to mention that one of the reasons we wanted to have Chris come here tonight is that he's just wrapping up his internship. He's had some what staff feels like is some really wonderful accomplishments, and while he's been here, we wanted him to have the chance to share these with you. This is his last week here, and these findings that he's had have just come together in the past few weeks. So, as staff, we hadn't had a chance to really completely think about some of the follow-up steps that may be suggested based on the work that he's done. And I wanted to specifically read from the staff memo sort of a summary of this, that that the emphasis has been on refining the greenhouse gas emissions baseline report. This originally was done with an effort with the county and Chapel Hill and Hillsborough several years ago, and then last year you all got an update from a capstone team at UNC, and Chris has even drilled down farther. And I think the most exciting thing for staff is that the focusing of his efforts on the clarity of scope, the accessibility and transparency of the energy consumption and greenhouse gas emissions data, and repeatability of the methodology really provides the greatest chance that the town will be able to continue to accurately track its greenhouse gas emissions with the smallest possible staff impact. So it's been a great boon having Chris work with us, attached is the resolution that basically asks you to accept the report tonight, and staff will intend to report back at a future date as we have a chance to more completely digest all of the work that Chris has done. So it's my pleasure and privilege to introduce Chris Lozinski to provide the report.
Before you sit down, Randy, I know that Chris has done a great job. I also know that he could not have done such a great job without you, and that, like, being a mentor really means a lot to an emerging professional, and I know you've been a really wonderful mentor, so thank you for doing that.
I appreciate that, and I also feel obliged to say there's been a number of staff that have provided support to Chris. So.
Thanks, Randy.
Yeah, I have a full list of acknowledgments at the end, because there have been quite a few staff that have helped me out, and other friends in other places. So, good to see you all again. Last time I was here, we had a discussion about energy use and facilities. So the agenda says I have 10 minutes to get through all of this. So I'd like to keep the discussion questions to the end. I'll try and get through all this and then have a discussion about what it all means at the end here. So quick background, Randy alluded to a lot of this, that Carrboro has been a leader on these issues for some time now, joining ICLEI, a local government sustainability organization, and their Cities for Climate Protection initiative in 2001. And as part of membership in that program, there are 5 milestones they recommend the town following to reduce their emissions and track them and implement policies, and they're listed on the right there. And the town has done parts of all 5, essentially, through its previous work. And the 2 that Randy alluded to in terms of the baseline inventory are up there, the ICLEI report that came out in 2009 and then the Capstone report last year. And my efforts represent a my attempt to give the town the ability to really track its progress on the smallest resolution level possible of just the per meter, per building, per car emissions. So you all know the next month what happened the previous month in terms of your emissions. So really, Randy had mentioned that the clarity of scope, the accessibility and transparency of the data, and the repeatability of the methodology were my focus. So in terms of scope, I focused on all scope 1 and scope 2 emissions attributable to town facilities, and that's kind of greenhouse gas speak for saying all emissions that either come from combustion on site, either through tailpipe or through natural gas combustion, or that can be attributed to electricity use. And that's called scope 2 emissions, basically saying that an action here using electricity results in emissions there at the power plant. So essentially, they broke down into the three categories listed there: electricity and facilities and lighting, the fuel use in the town fleet, and also the natural gas use in town buildings. This inventory excludes, notably, all emissions from those organizations listed there: OWASA, Orange County Solid Waste, Chapel Transit, and our traffic signals, as well as non-municipal activities, obviously, for reasons of that we don't have complete and direct control over all of those entities, and they should, you know, be responsible for tracking their emissions instead of us trying to do it for them. So a recommendation I do have is working with those entities to get a better sense of our total governmental footprint, because they do provide services for the town. But I only did focus on just the previously stated scope for the town. And as context, and as reported by the UNC Capstone team last year, our emissions in the town roughly, and by our emissions, I mean municipal operations emissions, account for about 2%, a little less than 2% of Carrboro's total emissions as a community. So while, you know, we'll talk about reduction strategies and all that, just giving a sense of context that it really isn't that much in the grand scheme of things, but it's still very important to understand and really delve into what's going on there. So the data I collected were from all the service providers we have, hard data, also town records, and set up digital access websites or web access for town staff to look at, so they don't have to call the service provider and get records, made it as easy as possible to allow for repeat inventories in coming years. And all data that you're going to see is in metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent, which is a pretty standard figure. And the data I collected allowed me to compile a footprint from January 2007 to this past, well, you know, this month, but I left it up to even calendar years. So December 2011 are the years included in this study. So the grand total graph, it's not very impressive looking, but it does tell a story. These are our total, this line represents our total emissions from all sectors across all years in the blue line there. The trend line I've laid on top of it in black is listed, the equation is listed on the right there, and shows that the slope of that line shows that our emissions have been increasing as a town by about 32 metric tons of carbon dioxide per year. So, you know, to dig a little deeper, where are those emissions coming from? Here I broke them down by sector, as in general sector, electricity in blue, vehicle fuel in red, and natural gas in green. And you can see the percent contribution. Electricity is about 56%, vehicle fuel 38%, natural gas 6%. And if you look closely at the tops of the bars, they all kind of generally do increase slightly, so there is no one sector that is more responsible for that increase, so to speak. To break this down even further, though, I broke it into facility and sector usage in this pie graph here, and this is the first figure I kind of want to stop at and look at. The individual sources of our calendar year 2011 emissions. And you can see that streetlights actually are the largest single contributor in terms of their kilowatt hours used, converts into more carbon emitted than anything else, followed by police fuel, public works fuel, and then Century Center and Fire Station Number 1 being our largest facility emitters. So I'm sure we'll discuss this graph at the end of the presentation, but I just wanted to put this up there to let you see that for now. So a big question, though, as to why our emissions were going up, the town added a facility in August 2010. We added the new fire station. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask, you know, what portion of that is attributable to that fire station? And so the line in red shows, without fire station number 2 accounted for, the growth in every other aspect of the town. So, you know, not including fire department fuel, though, that is a very small contribution. If you look back in terms of the increase with fire station number 2, there should be a little bit in there that I didn't take out there. But apart from that, the natural gas and electricity use of fire station number two is taken out. So across all of the facilities, that second trend line is over there, and it says that all of their facilities have increased 18 by an average of 18 metric tons of carbon dioxide per year. So there is actually an increase going on, and it's not just because we added more facilities. So now that we know where all of those emissions are coming from, we need to figure out where they're going to and where they have come from and what we can do about it. So this is sort of the central figure of the report. If we look back at this real quick, these two trend lines, the one with the fire station two included and excluded, I took as an upper bound and a lower bound for growth into the future, because I don't know at what rate we've been adding facilities in the past. So it's definitely not a linear trend, but it's the best approximation I can have in the, given the constraints of data and time. So I extended those two trend lines, both backward and forward. The purple line, it's hard to tell, but that's the top one on the right there. It's the steeper sloped one. That one does include fire station number two, assuming that we do grow at that rate. Blue does not, assuming that we grow at a slower rate. So those are the two projections, forward and backward, business as usual into the future, and also potential levels in the back here. Given the town's resolution in 2009 to control its carbon emissions to a level that would make our contribution to atmospheric carbon, you know, I don't know how to phrase it as quickly as I can, but the 350 parts per million resolution, saying that we won't contribute more than that. Global atmospheric carbon, annual average atmospheric carbon, exceeded 350 in 1988. So I projected our fast growth trend back to 1988 to give us a baseline. And I chose the fast growth just to give us a lower baseline, a lower target to shoot for, because that's what we frankly should be shooting for, is the lowest possible baseline. So that's the black line there, is the 1988 level of carbon. And the green line in the center is our little blip of actual. And the time series here goes from 1987 to 2035, just to be clear. So in the middle there, that's our actual little blip. And then going forward from it are three possible reduction strategies. And after looking around the state a little bit, the most successful, it has seemed, program for greenhouse gas reduction is now taking place in Asheville. And they passed in 2007 a 2% per year of 2007 levels policy, saying that, okay, you know, we know what our emissions are, and this is 2% of them, and we're going to reduce by this amount every year, 2%. And they were very successful in doing that. They were achieving reductions of over 3%. So they doubled their policy to 4% recently, and they have not been able to achieve that target quite yet. But they have been achieving, you know, 8.4, I don't want to misquote, 8-something percent in the last 3 years. So a little over 3% per year, or 2%, yeah, a little under. So to model that, I chose the yellow line, the top line. That is a 2% reduction plan, which would get us back to our 1988 levels by 2033. A red line there in the middle, which is a 4% reduction plan, which would get us back to 1988 levels by 2023. And then in Sammy's email that he circulated in response to my memo, he mentioned that 40% below 1990 levels was the target that was sort of intended by the resolution. So I added another line to the graph showing that trend, 40% below 1990 levels by 2020. And that equates to between a 7% and 8% reduction annually. So those are those three trend lines there, and that's what it kind of looks like going forward. Of course, just saying these things won't make them happen. There are costs and planning and things like that involved. So in an effort to understand where we can start to wrap our heads around these reductions, what does 2% per year mean for us? Well, roughly half of fire station number two's energy usage, if you want to think about it like that. If we can eliminate that much from the town's emissions every year, that's about 2%. Also, you know, we're talking about installing the solar photovoltaic system on the farmer's market that has an installed capacity of about 5 kilowatts, produce about 7,000 kilowatt hours annually at that system. So if we wanted to offset enough electricity use to get that 2% footprint, we need to install between 45 and 50 kilowatts of solar annually and use all the electricity in town facilities. That size system would cover about a tenth of an acre. So the town has also looked at energy efficiency. That's in terms of just putting on solar. It's not a very cost-effective solution to this. There's plenty of efficiency measures we can undertake first before we do that. And the town has looked at previously getting consultants in to see where our buildings can be improved. And so there are two studies that I was provided by the planning department with to look at. One was our grant applications for the Energy Efficiency Conservation Block Grant, EECBG. And we went around and looked at facilities and proposed projects, asked for grant money. Based on the projects proposed there, a 2% reduction in facilities would cost about 46 grand per year in terms of just capital improvements. The payback on that, though, is pretty good. It was 8 to 9 years, considering everything that they were suggesting. So there definitely is a payback, but there is also an upfront capital cost there. The other study that was performed was by Waste Reduction Partners, who illustrated the number of no and low-cost solutions that are available in the town, and there's quite a few. They basically suggested that really tampering with and adjusting the Century Center thermostat could save the town $5,000 a year.
Jesus.
So, yeah, they're saying that it's the main auditorium is cooled and heated to 70 degrees year-round. I don't know if that's still true. But
it's not
true. There we go. Rebuttal. Yeah, so maybe that's been fixed now, because that study is about 2 years old. So I'm not going to challenge that any further. George has the final say on all this. So regardless of that specific opportunity, though, I'm sure there are a number that still remain and are worth further study and investigation. So basically, I'd like to kind of open it up to discussion right after this slide of just saying that emissions are increasing. They won't go down without action. And I was able to put the town in a position to take good action by setting up these reporting protocols, and there are plenty of opportunities for savings out there. And I also, of course, would like to thank all of those folks for their help. So thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
I have two questions. Sure. One is, I did want to know what the Century Center, what it's set at now, since George is saying it's not at 70.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, and then I have a follow-up to that.
There is a software system that we use to monitor and adjust, so not every room is set at the same setting.
Okay.
And so that is something we monitor and adjust, and Chris was correct. At one time, the hall was set, but now we adjust up and down based on requests from the folks at the Century Center and so forth. So we have been monitoring that and looking to save costs. So that's something we implemented more usage of. It's a rather sophisticated system that we implemented the greater use of, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago.
And is it up or down based on use, too? Because sometimes the auditorium isn't being used and it's being heated or cooled with no one in there, or is it just based on what people need in their office or their...
No, the office areas, you know, there are zones and so forth.
So they do that, they adjust that?
Well, no, there's presets, so we don't have folks
adjusting
to
it.
Just slightly. There's limits to what they can do and so forth, much like in here. There's presets, and then there are limits that folks can take it up or down. And there are times, areas in an old building like this and portions of the Century Center that get cool and people need the ability to adjust them slightly.
We've had that here.
So,
yeah, I guess I'm wondering, I'm curious, given that it's 15% of the emissions come from the Century Center, which seems huge to me, what else we can do. And if the auditorium isn't being used and it's being heated and cooled, I'd love to know how much that's happening, because that seems like a natural place, probably among other things that we can do there. I don't know what's been done.
Yeah, I would just caution, much like any large facility, though, that if you take it down too far in between, and then you have to turn on the unit.
It's going to imbalance the system.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a balance here with what you have to do with the system. So we have been trying to do that.
Okay. Well, my other question related to the Century Center, or what other, and maybe because Randy mentioned staff hasn't looked at the report, what other recommendations have been made or implemented for that, given that it's 15%, which is a huge amount, it seems like?
Back when Randy had, we had made a grant application for making some modifications. And it was looking for putting light sensors, automatic sensors, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Town Hall, we're pretty good about turning off lights, and we don't have as many folks from the outside coming in rooms and leaving lights on and so forth. So there's one aspect. Century Center already has the T8 fixtures, the mm-hmm. Lower energy usage. Town Hall does not, but we're in the process as a unit burns out, we will change the ballast in order to do that. But to go ahead and, as an example, redo all of Town Hall has quite an initial expense. And I'll just couple that with, we struggle already to paint the walls, fix the toilets, and all those other things are things we balance in our facilities maintenance budget. So I think Chris made that point earlier. There's, you know, those initial costs sometimes are not within our means, even though in the long range there's a payback, but you got to have the initial capital to do those things.
Okay. And this, Chris, I mean, this might be for Chris. That's your name?
Yeah.
Or you, George. It's about what you mentioned, Asheville, and I read it in the report. What can you just name a few things that, I know they're a different city, but a few things that they have done, given that they've met the 2% goal and they have now the 4% goal? And
so a lot of it had to do with their streetlights and the agreement that they struck with Progress, because they work with Progress up there. I guess I should be a little closer to the mic. They basically negotiated a different rate with their streetlights, and we were able to replace them. They're now sequentially replacing them all with LEDs. So that was a huge energy savings for them. They've also been doing things with their waste collection and waste services, and they included that in their greenhouse gas inventory. So it is partially a matter of scope. So our scope is very specific to buildings, fleet, you know, natural gas, you know, just basically buildings and fleet, you know, by the way I've defined it. So the opportunities there are a little bit narrower than the ones that Asheville had.
Okay. Thank you.
Could I also add that we are doing other things as well and have been for several years. Programmable thermostats were put in most of the buildings, not the Century Center, that already had a sophisticated system, but here several years ago. We put in instant hot water units to help for people not running the hot water as long. Again, we have a program for changing out bulbs, and that's part of our five-year plan that we hope to continue to do. We've gone as far as pull the bulbs out of the vending machine so the lights aren't on. So although I noticed the one downstairs here when I was checking out the cookies still has its lights on, but the ones at Public Works are not. From an equipment standpoint, we have 4 hybrid vehicles now. We have downsized most of our pickups for the crew leaders, not the crew leaders, but the supervisors, getting better fuel mileage.
Yes,
that's one of them. We practice fuel conservation. We track our fuel. In fact, the fuel in 10-11 usage overall was down from the fiscal year before that. So it's gone roughly from the last few years, and it has gone up, but it was roughly 79,000 gallons, that's diesel and fuel together, in 7-8. To 10-11 was 81,000. It had been 82,000. So I think that's roughly 3 or 4%. But it's we had some increases in service calls. I know in fire, there's a lot of detail of where that is and so forth. But we track that pretty closely.
Two questions. The Century Center, of course, that's including the police department and the recs and parks.
Everything that is metered into that.
So building. It's one site, okay.
Yep.
And on the fire station number 2, is that that percentage, does that have to do with the vehicles only, or is it the whole footprint and the vehicles?
So the difference here on that graph is only from the natural gas and electricity use in the fire station. So, which is fire station number 2, 3% of 3%. Town footprint.
Right. But it's 3% more than we had prior to that point.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So there still was growth in the other facilities, as evidenced by the red line, but part of that growth was just because we added a new facility.
And I guess the only other question I had was, because I was wondering about the relationship with, I guess, is it Duke Energy on the contracts and how much leeway we might have in terms of working with the contracts? We're dealing with a different utility, so.
For streetlights?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so streetlights are basically one of Duke's, a big money maker for them, and we haven't really explored the options for that. I just hear that there might be some pushback against them from them, but that's nothing official. We haven't fully explored that. So, but that, I would suggest that would be a good place to start, for sure.
So thank you so much. This is a really valuable study for us and to staff for collaborating on this. It's really important. I was curious, I have a few questions. One is I was curious to know what the method or setup is that will allow for us to track our energy use more efficiently. Is that per department or how's that set
It's
up?
Just all town electricity accounts through Duke. You can access through one web portal. Piedmont, who, you know, I know who to email. They said they'll email us quarterly reports on our electricity use. PSNC, our natural gas provider, all through one web portal. Okay. So it's for town staff to just, you know, we have a login for the town staff, and they can just go and see past bills, see, you know, current usage, change in bills. They have good web infrastructure on that. So it's very, very quick feedback in that respect.
So it sounds like maybe that's per department, but I was thinking that just like we do with our money, we have a budget and we keep track of that kind of thing. And given the kind of targets that we were identifying here and the specific one we've already identified, which is 40% below 1990 by 2020, I would hope that staff could track this quarterly, I guess, is what you're recommending. That's certainly something I hope we can do so that we can get an accurate picture of what we're actually achieving.
It could actually go as quickly as monthly because, you know, what I did, Public Works does their fuel reports quarterly, but I just divided the quarterly figures by three because electricity and natural gas were monthly. So that was the easiest and allowed me to see, you know, because, hey, we're having a warm winter. Last couple of months, our emissions have been down.
Right. You know, so monthly quickly. Would allow us to assess the effect of climate change on our energy use, too.
Yeah.
The other, well, I noticed a recommendation is that supporting documentation and analysis used in this report be maintained in accessible staff file servers for sharing across departments. So that's essentially what that would speak to, is there anything else?
Basically, I have a bunch of Excel spreadsheets. Duke actually provided me electricity use for every facility back to 2003. Mm-hmm. So the only reason I picked 2007 was that was the first year that I had data for all sectors. So, you know, I made Excel spreadsheets for every account, every bill, every kilowatt hour, every, you know, anytime. And you can see what they're all using. Yeah. If you want to venture through it, it's great. You know,
no.
50 columns, thousand rows, you know, all that good stuff. But it's all there. You know, so if somebody is interested in town staff or.
Well, but that sounds great. I mean, so basically, I foresee us having kind of the same way we have a budget every year. We have a budget with our energy use and relative to our real goal of 40% reduction in 1990 levels. And I, you know, there are creative ways we could achieve that. Each department could do its whatever percentage per year, and it could be a contest. I don't know if that makes sense. You know, one idea of many that there may be for staff to discuss on how best to reach these goals. I just want to make sure that we have that conversation and that we really start working to achieve what we have to do. The other thing was, I know there's the countywide green climate advisory group, and I'm on it, and we've never met, and I would really like to have that committee meet. And partly, I would like that committee to meet so that we can talk about these other entities that that work with us, like OWASA and Chapel Transit and Solid Waste, and fold them into a similar assessment of what we're currently doing and what we might do in the future. After all, we do have a proportion of emissions through those entities. As for the street lighting, the LED street lighting, I think that's a great opportunity for us to perhaps go in coalition with other jurisdictions. I know Durham's interested and engaged with the Utility Commission to make sure the utilities are doing what is sane. So the Asheville example is really a great opportunity and model in the state where the municipalities purchased the capital costs, the LED lighting, and the return on that investment has been as quick as 5 years. And what they've done in Asheville is they pretended like they're paying the old lighting for 15 years, and the savings get put into capital improvement project for green improvement. So when when you're talking about how there's, you know, the money for painting walls and all these other things that, that are competing for money, is competing for these energy improvements, this would be a fund that could be dedicated and finance these really low-hanging fruits that have much quicker returns on investments.
And the thing about their fund, too, is it incentivizes projects that weren't green before to be green. And so through that fund, their police department, you know, requested a couple new cars, and they got Chevy Volts because of, you know, the incentive through using that separate pool of capital.
Right.
So there's a lot of
pluses.
Yeah, pluses, that reinforcing ones. So now that would reduce their emissions, and that's the second most, the police fuel. So things like that.
And I want staff to look into, you know, I've seen the Chapel Hill Police Department uses bicycles, and, you know, we're known to be, we're like higher ranked bicycle-wise than Chapel Hill. So it makes a lot of sense for us to really be pushing for alternative forms than what we currently have. I believe our Chapel Hill department, our Carborough department doesn't have any electric or hybrid vehicles. I mean, we should also look into that. And so there's a big opportunity there, you know, 17%. And of course, encourage Public Works as much as possible to reduce that. I see on campus all the electric vehicles that maintenance use throughout the campus, there's an opportunity for us to be using those kinds of electric vehicles here too. And I forwarded to the board and to David, there's a company out of Durham that's creating bicycle electric assisted vehicles for, and there's a wait list by the county, the Durham County, and the Public Works of Durham. So we should get on that too. It was interesting to note that they're doing it in part to show and ramp up their image as a green city. So we've got that. We just can't lose that image. And so we've got to catch up to the game. So those are some of the comments I have. And I do want to stress in finishing, could we go back to the target graphs?
Yeah.
The importance of, well, for one, in as much as we can, I guess the degree to which these lines on the bottom are dropping is in part determined by how much we actually have been rising. So I encourage us to look into and really try to get a better sense of that as much as possible. I know that when the Century Center came online, it also bumped us up. So those big significant milestones could help us better inform kind of where that line might lie. All that to say that we really do need to stick to our goal as expressed in the resolution, which is represented by that orange line. And it's a pretty radical ask, especially comparing other places in the state that are striving to do that. And I want us to maintain that line. It's better for us to fail but keep an accurate sense of where we should be heading than to set a standard that we might achieve but is not doing as sufficient compared to what we must do. So those are comments.
Jackie, and then me, and then Randy.
Thank you. I know that several state and certainly the federal government and even some departments on campus are beginning to look at flex time and telecommuting as a way of reducing both the in-house energy usage and the emissions that people use getting to and from work. I know that that is a shift in the paradigm here, and I also know that not every position would easily fit into that, but sometimes it is more doable than one would think. There are several people in my office who are now working, 4 long days, and that has all kinds of benefits. Some people in my position will someday soon, I don't want to, but some people will be able to work several days from home using our iPads. I think really we do have more positions in Town Hall where people would be able to telecommute than we may at first think. Because when you have all of the technology, and when, including the ability to speak to each other through Skype and to watch each other, that maybe if we sat and thought about it and got employees' input, we would be able to come up with some ways that people could telecommute at least part-time or have flex time. And I think the benefits both in our own energy usage and in overall would certainly be worth looking at.
Could I mention that in, I think it was right after the high fuel costs of 2008 when they spiked, we did precisely what you suggested. Across departments, we formed a committee and addressed not only items at work, but for those who were commuting and paying the high price of gas. And there are some folks that are still now working four-day weeks versus five-day weeks from
before. Do you think we could, like, relook at that again and maybe give it – I'm really glad we did that. Maybe we could bump that up again or remind people of it?
Well, it's certainly worth taking, you know, as well as revisiting idling policies, all those types of things.
Right.
That, you know, as prices go down, people become – less concerned and, and so forth. So certainly, I'm sure that's something that you know could be looked at again as well.
Yeah, thank you.
So well, something I'd like to note just briefly is that even if you do reduce those emissions, they still wouldn't show up here because technically those emissions are Scope 3 to the town.
I'm not really. I mean, I was concerned.
She's not on that, though.
Right. Yeah, so if
I mean, I'm certainly concerned about the ones to the town, and the ones to the town would show because there would be fewer bodies for fewer hours in our facilities, but also kind of concerned about the other 98 that are.
Yeah, so it's definitely a good strategy to pursue. I just wanted to be clear that it wouldn't show up there.
I know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead.
George, this pie graph. Any projection what would happen with that 16% when we have to start trucking trash to Durham?
Well, it's going up. I can tell you that. I don't know what the percentage is. I mean, the calculation of the additional fuel was made when we presented the impact.
So there's no projection on in terms of greenhouse gas emissions what that would look like.
No, that certainly was, I think the point was raised when this town started talking about having to go to Durham.
Yeah, because I know that Asheville, and I'm really glad Sammy and Michelle brought Asheville back up. Asheville back in 1990 started to change how it dealt with waste as one of the pillars of change in terms of just affecting recycling and carbon emissions, et cetera. And I think, I know that the board, Carborough, we've supported, Mark's proposal about a waste station. I think one of the things that we really need to get people behind who are really concerned about greenhouse gas emissions is what will happen when we have to start trucking waste not only to Durham, but
from there to Virginia or
exactly,
wherever.
Exactly. Because you just look at any of the models, what we do with waste, the further away we have to go to make sure that it's dealt with, the more cost and the greater negative impact it has on greenhouse gases. So, I think we've been consistent. But, I look at this pie graph, and we can do all these little things, but if we continue to make the decision, and when I say we, I mean the county, continues to make the decision that the waste is going to be trucked and we're going to, enter into a non-sustainable solution, this is not going to change. Right. It's going to get worse.
Wanted to raise one point. It's probably something for a later agenda, this later agenda item that we have today for our retreat. Speaking to what Randy was pointing to and also the other agenda, the schools facilities agenda, I really want to encourage us to consider an advisory committee that could really be addressing all these limits that we have to face. It's also a conversation with Owassa that we are constantly having. So the greenhouse gas emissions, the energy we use, these are all representing an opportunity for so many smart people of our community to engage in this conversation through an advisory board. So I want us to have that conversation and consider it as a possibility during a retreat.
Okay. Well, I think, so is there, isn't there a resolution?
Did you move the resolution? Yeah, move attachment A.
Okay. So could I ask, can you go back to the chart Sammy was talking about that shows the, yeah. So I think the additional thing of follow-up at some point in the future that would be helpful to me, and I'm not trying to put a date on this one, but would really, I think it would be helpful to me to have some reaction to staff about what kind of, you know, what kind of resources, what kind of practical steps would we have to take to move, you know, in the direction that that our currently adopted goal would tend to suggest. And I think the other thing that I raised this last time, and we had this discussion and got attacked on the blogs for it, but my other question is, you know, given that, so the energy consumed by our town government is something like 2%, did you say, of the energy consumed in the community. I just think we have to keep thinking about the reality that, you know, so $50,000 spent inside of town hall may, or at Public Works or wherever, may achieve a certain level of energy savings for the town and for the taxpayers, and that's great if it has a return on investment that makes sense, then let's go ahead and do it. But there may be also the there may equally be the opportunity to spend $50,000 on providing services to our community that provide for an equal or greater amount of reduction. So I would just like to like kind of think about I think the question of how much carbon dioxide our town government and its operations are creating is important. But apparently, it's 49 times more important what the rest of our community is doing. So yeah, let's just bear that in mind.
Good point. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great work. Excellent work.
Appreciate it, Chris.
So I'd like to move this and look forward to a report back from staff once staff has an opportunity to really digest this report.
Okay. Great. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. That brings us to a review of 2012 draft annual report of the SAPFO from the Technical Advisory Committee.